You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me, as always, is Alex. Thank you for being here, Alex.
Thanks for having me, Tyus.
I just got back from the first time I've ever seen a full solar eclipse. I, on a whim, decided, you know what, I've got nothing else going on. So I drove up to Idaho, and it was one of the most remarkable things I'd ever seen. Have you ever seen a full eclipse?
I have not. I'm truly jealous.
It was more beautiful than I anticipated. It was more of a sensory experience than I anticipated. The temperature drops like incredibly quickly, and there's a 360 degree sunset, and you know, animals start freaking out, crickets started chirping. Like it's an amazing event. It only lasted 2 minutes for that complete eclipse, and it took me 3 days to make that happen. Completely worth it. Absolutely worth it. So there's another one coming up, I think, in like 6 years, and you have to go.
All right.
It's remarkable. In fact, there's one happening in like 2 years in like Chile, and I'm considering going to Chile for it. But there's things in the news that are actually relevant.
We got a nice 48 hours of clips news before. You know, unfortunately, the news was taken over again by politics.
It's true. One of the things that was beautiful while I was at the eclipse is there's all these people there hanging out, waiting for this event to happen. And the only thing that was brought up politically was, wow, it really doesn't matter in the whole scheme of things.
I love that.
It was beautiful.
I want to get that on a bumper sticker.
Yeah. So yeah. All these people just gathering together, they were here for a worldwide event as opposed to just something within their little pocket of concern. It was really, really special. So I highly encourage anybody listening, go check that out. And now into the tiny pockets of concern. So one thing that is that has been floating around has been Jeff Deist is the president of the Mises Institute. If you're not familiar with the Mises Institute, check it out, Mises.com or .org, one of the two. And he did a speech called For a New Liberty, which I read the whole thing. I didn't hear him say it, but I read the entire speech. And to be honest, I thought it was pretty good. It was a pretty solid speech on everything except at the end, there was one sentence, and that sentence seems to be dividing the Libertarian Party for some reason. The sentence was, in other words, blood and soil and God and nation still matter to people. Libertarians ignore this at the risk of irrelevance. So the word specifically blood and soil is a reference to Nazis, and he mentioned it in his speech. And once I think it passed over almost everybody because it just kind of flowed in there, and afterwards everyone like freaked out. So I specifically went through this speech and I was looking at it, and basically everything in it is anti-fascist. The whole premise of this speech is embracing libertarian values, and yes, those words are inciting, I suppose, but I don't think that you throw the baby out with the bathwater is the right term on this. Perhaps it was a terrible idea to include those words in there, and I think it's really important that when you're out there spreading the message of liberty, when you're out there spreading the philosophy, which is built into our policy, which is kind of amazing that we have philosophy as an underpinning, making sure that your messaging is really, really solid, because three words of, geez, what probably was a 45-minute speech destroyed the whole speech and left a party divided. So it shows just how important your messaging can be. And honestly, it kind of raises my anxiety getting on the microphone, knowing that we wing these podcasts. These are not scripted things. And there's going to be times when I'm going to mess up. I hope deeply that you understand that our messaging here is we're wanting the world to be a better place. We're wanting to unite a party, not divide that party. And if we make those mistakes, please reach out to us at podcast@lpnevada.org is our email. Let us know that we've made those mistakes, because I would much rather be called out on them and get an opportunity to apologize or explain what I meant, rather than people just saying, oh, you know what? They said this stupid thing, and now I'm clearly not a libertarian anymore. I got to go somewhere else. I've got to figure out something else to be, even though my ideals, my ideology, my my values align so perfectly with this party, which is how I feel. I feel that I was kind of an outcast from political parties because, man, I really align with these ideas over here and these ideas over here, but none of them had a solid philosophy underneath it. So be careful with the words you use. Shame on you, Jeff, for messing up by adding three words in there that are going to piss people off. But as far as I'm concerned, you're in the clear, because the messaging of the speech for me was all about more freedom and not less. I wiped the slate clean. But Alex, you got a different opinion on that, or the same?
I mean, I really don't, because I haven't read the speech or even heard it, so I really don't like to comment on things when I haven't had a chance to read them in context. Certainly, I think that when you first read that sentence by itself, you sort of get the impression that he's saying that it matters to people, and so it should matter to us. But the more I was thinking about it, the more that this sentence seems to mean that because it matters to people, we have our work cut out for us. Like, we can't ignore that this matters to some people. But I would counter argue to him that we shouldn't be worried about what, you know, a couple hundred people that gather in Charlottesville seem to think. And we shouldn't be worried about, you know, people whose number one issue is the country, God and country, right? This is not our target. I don't say we're never going to reach these people, but I mean, you just don't see a lot of proselytizing to the atheist community from the Christian one or the Buddhist. You know your target audience, right? People who don't know, they haven't figured it out yet. There are so many independents and nonpartisans and undecided in this country that I think you can build an entire libertarian movement by finding normal people who have not really found the party that houses their ideas. And, you know, I don't want to say that we don't care about the people that believe in God and country and blood and soil. I'm not saying we don't care about them.
You said blood and soil. Yeah. You're a Nazi.
Exactly. we have to be careful to think about things in context, of course. And again, I don't know the context of the speech, but I guess my surmise would be that you know, we should ignore them, actually, because until they're a movement, which I haven't seen any evidence of truly, I mean, again, like we said on our last episode, there will always be cults. There's always going to be these groups of people that exist. I'm not going out of my way to tell flat earthers they're wrong. And people that do that, I mean, it might be fun, but are you really accomplishing anything? In the absence of any evidence to the contrary, they believe the earth is completely flat. And there's just this overwhelming amount of, I mean, you got pictures. I mean, you could do your own experiment with a camera phone on a balloon today, and you could prove that there's a curvature to the earth, and yet there's still people that believe it. So
you're saying you almost give them more credibility by giving them exposure to it, or yes, by engaging them in that.
And people who know marketing really well and messaging really well know this to be true. You want to make it about your message, not about theirs. Don't talk about the opposition's points. I mean, it don't even paint the libertarians as contrasting with the people who want fascism, because their time is over. I mean, yes, of course we're against any kind of strong totalitarian or centrist national government. Haven't you been paying attention to our platform? I mean, this is what we stand for. We're totally against these things. We don't need to go out of our way to identify them and make people think that this is an issue for us. We need to be working on our messaging, our marketing, our solutions. The normal, everyday people and everyday Americans that want to join the Libertarian Party, they're waiting to hear our answers to problems that they think are problems with society and with their communities in particular. And until we start messaging those solutions, we're going to get caught into this kind of whirlpool of despair and hand-wringing about a few hundred people over there. I mean, we need to be building a movement here, and you just can't do that while there's an expression, in fact. I'll even bring out, I'll bust out one of Morton Blackwell's rules of the public policy process.
I'm excited.
I'll even do an effect thrilled for those of you on YouTube. And it says to not stop to kick every barking dog.
Hmm.
That's one of his 42 rules. That's one of the 42 rules he feels is most important to the public policy process. And you don't stop to kick every barking dog. This is a barking dog. You got to be focused on the main meal, right? We can't be worried about these offshoots. So that's really all I have to say about that.
The SPCA is on board with you on that.
The who?
The SPCA.
The SPCA.
Yeah, they don't like it when people kick every dog that they say. Oh. They're yeah, sorry. It's a dad joke.
I'm sorry. I just got destroyed by a dad joke.
It wasn't a good dad. Well, there's not a good dad joke. They don't exist. Okay. So let's move on to some local barking dogs. One of those happens to be Uber. So here in Vegas, we've got we have so much tourism that it justifies requiring a lot of public transportation. And when I say public transportation, some of that can be privatized, some of, whatever that looks like. Lots of cabs, lots of things like that. We've got a monorail even. It's a terrible, terrible investment. And so when Uber came to town, it was, from many people's perspective, a wonderful, wonderful thing for our economy. From the taxi cab perspective, it was a terrible, terrible thing. And in the news now is Uber is basically going to be upping the charge, from what I hear. So I've got a little video. We'll play it in the upper thirds on what Uber is going to have to deal with, essentially. Uber and other ride-sharing organizations.
It was an early morning for legislators in Carson City as they met to discuss a proposed amendment that could make it difficult for rideshare companies in Nevada. It would require drivers to pay up, tacking on additional licenses and more expensive insurance coverage. But if the bill passes, a taxi may be the only option, leaving drivers like Wright out of a job.
So it would seem that this legislation will kill business for people who really need it.
Latest numbers show there are about 57,000 rideshare drivers here in Nevada right now. So if this law passes, it would affect a lot of people, including the customers. Coming up at 6 p.m. here from some people who say they use this rideshare service every day. Reporting from Desert Inn in Valley View, Leslie Medine, 13 Action News.
So there's tons of people that actually use this as their primary job. And what this would do is essentially would increase their cost of insurance. They'd need to be at a minimum of $1.5 million for insurance, which puts them at the very highest in the entire country for it. And also, even right now, they all are required to have a business license, which almost none of them have. And here's my problem with the license thing. So a license, and I love this quote, I don't know who to attribute it to, is when a government takes your rights away and then sells it back to you. That's what licensing is. So there are people out there that they want to braid hair for a living. It's just an ability they have, right? It seems like a skill, seems like a right. You're not harming anybody. Just go out there and do it. Well, you can't. You're not allowed to do hair without a license to do it. So the government has taken that right away, and to get it back, you have to purchase it. And ultimately, that's kind of what's taking place with requiring a license to give somebody a ride down the road if you're doing commerce with them. And you might say, well, that doesn't really affect me. Well, what happens if you're selling something on Craigslist? If we go down this road, if we continue down the road of any time commerce takes place, you need a license. If you try and sell something on eBay, suddenly you might need to have a business license just to have the right to sell that one item, right? If you want to have a garage sale, would you like to be required to have a license to have that garage sale? There's many, many situations where you look at it and go, well, it doesn't affect me. It's not a big deal. It does affect you. It just hasn't hit you yet. It hasn't come down your way. Now, I have several friends that make their full-time income off of Uber or Lyft or various ride-sharing services. And their current belief is that these are really just last-ditch efforts by the taxi cab union, essentially to prevent their own demise because their technology has been overcome, essentially. And I hate to say it, but I kind of agree with them. I think that's exactly what is going on here. What are your thoughts?
You know, I was very excited and pleased to see that the Libertarian Party of Nevada worked very hard this last session to help kill this legislation. It died in committee and was revived in like the last 5 minutes of the session. So the only part of the text that passed was the requirement for a business license. But they did not have to go through the taxi cab authority. They can just get a standard business license, which, again, do we want that? No, but it's a lot better than what we're going to be looking at. There were requirements in there that they'd have to wait 15 minutes before picking somebody up just so that the taxis would have an opportunity to compete.
Wow.
It was that blatant. It was that obvious that this was written to level the playing field. And this is why the government gets into trouble anytime they stray into the industry. They created this problem by heavily regulating the taxi industry. They are the ones that created the problem. So what the taxis have done is they said, well, our way of life is being threatened. We're going to donate lots of money to campaigns of people running for office. And now our expectation is that you're going to, you know, you're going to pay back what we gave you. Now, what happened is Nevadans were pissed. And Nevadans came together. Libertarian Party of Nevada played a significant role. We had activists all across the state that were calling the governor's office to the point where his phone was ringing off the hook. And I think we had something like over 100, 150 activists from the LP Nevada call, just us, all within like an hour, and all over the state, just to indicate that, you know, this is a bill that would directly affect them. Almost all of us know somebody who either uses or is a driver for a transportation network, as they were calling them, because they couldn't really say Uber and Lyft. We all knew what they meant, right? This was like calling it soda, but we knew they were going after Pepsi and Coke, right? We all knew that. It's the same kind of thing. They call them like transportation networks or something. But in other words, we killed most of this bill. We helped kill most of this bill in committee by working hard with our lobbying efforts. And then we encouraged the governor to not sign this bill. The governor did sign it, but that wasn't too unexpected, because the Republicans put up like perhaps the very worst fiscal conservative in Nevada state history from any party. And they gave him the governorship. So with his pen, he signed into law, unfortunately, the requirement for business licenses for independent contractors operating their Uber and Lyft business via the Uber and Lyft platform. And that's what's really frustrating, Tyus, is that this is just another way, another barrier to entry for people that are in poor communities, that this is their only opportunity to make money. It doesn't require a huge set of skills other than driving a car. That's something a lot of people can do. And as long as you pass sort of a basic background check for safety reasons, and you carry Nevada state minimum insurance, you can drive your car around and pick people up and make some money. And it just saddens me to see legislators do something that would not only destroy jobs, but would hurt the communities that they profess to help. And the Democrats did this in a huge way. I'm very disappointed in Assemblyman Richard Carrillo, who in the past has worked with us on a couple bills that where we saw eye to eye. But on this one, there's no explanation other than he's term limited and he felt that this wasn't really going to come up in a future election against him. But his community in particular, in fact, he might even be your Assemblyman, Tyus.
He might be.
Now that you live over here. And this is a community that in particular would be hard hit by seeing Uber and Lyft leave Nevada. And $1.5 million liability insurance, 15-minute wait time, and a business license in every municipality that you're in the jurisdiction of, that would have been a sure way to make sure that Uber and Lyft could not possibly compete with taxis. And I'm so excited to see the destruction of the taxi industry. I think that they have only had to improve to try to keep up with Uber and Lyft, and that for the first time in decades, they've had such real competition that they're actually improving their service as well. So the ones that stick around, the taxis that do survive, which there might not be many. I mean, they've lost like 15-20% of their year-over-year revenue this year, and I'm pleased to see that. I love Uber and Lyft. I would rather use it than taxis any day. I know a lot of you feel the same way, so please continue to contribute and to be activists. And when we put out a call to action on our Facebook page and our Twitter, please call the governor's office. Please call your legislators. We try to keep you very informed, micro-informed about the legislation that you care about. We know Nevadans care about this, and I was very happy to see us come together, but the fight's not over, Tyus. This is going to come up again.
Of course. Of course it is. Let's move on to some national news. Of things that made me really, really sad, this is the big one. Trump ran on a campaign that was really, really heavy on, you know, let's put America first and let's stop worrying about this stuff that's happening outside the country when we can focus on the stuff that's happening inside the country. And he received many votes, maybe because people hated Hillary, but there's also the potential that they went, you know what, we don't want wars anymore. When Ron Paul was running, he got the most votes from veterans. Basically, we see the anti-war party gets tons of votes. Who's ever running under anti-war gets tons and tons of votes. And Obama was in a 8-year war. Well, he was in, I should say, it was longer than that. It's the longest war of our history. But his entire term was shrouded in war. So I think there's lots of people that were like, let's get out of this. Let's make this over. And there was maybe a little bit of hope, a little glimmer of hope that, you know, Trump is the most different candidate you could ever have put into office. So maybe he'll try and do something different. And a lot of people looked at Hillary and said, well, she's a war hawk. We're going to see more of that same war thing if we keep going this direction. Unfortunately, Trump has just said that he's going to be sending more troops into Afghanistan. So all hope is lost. if Bush starts this war, well, I shouldn't say he starts it, but it began under his term, and then it goes all the way through Obama, who's a very, very different candidate, and now into Trump, who is a very, very different candidate. It looks like there's really no hope for this anti-war stance. They haven't announced how many troops they're going to be sending over to Afghanistan. People have heard that it's around 4,000. For me, this is just terrible. It's the worst news that I could have, because while there are a lot of things that are really worth focusing upon, the number one for me is life, right? Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Well, that life is so valuable. And I talk a lot about property rights and things of that nature, but when I'm talking about little things like that, when I'm talking about property rights, what I'm talking about is you owning your life and other people owning their life, and how that is the fundamental right of you being on this planet. It's the one thing you have that you have control over. And if somebody takes that away from you, it's awful. And if the person that takes that away from you is funded by somebody else, how culpable are they in that? Well, your tax money is currently funding the death of many, many people overseas right now. And it's encouraging a war that ends up killing our brothers and sisters over there. And that's how I really view it. I'm not just saying brothers and sisters that happen to be Americans. I'm saying brothers and sisters in humanity. And I couldn't be more upset about anything that has taken place. I know people were really pissed about, hey, he's going to build a wall. That's ridiculous. Okay. Yeah, it is. It is ridiculous. But what's really, really terrible is killing people and taking lives. And so I'm super sad about this and super depressed. I have no real answer to it as far as this is what we need to do, besides you need to go out there and you need to vote. I'm absolutely for protests around things like this. And anti-war protest sounds great. Get out there and make your voices heard about what you care about. Because I think a lot of people do not care about going to war in the Middle East. I think a lot of people care about saving each other's lives and the humanity that brings. So that's I'll get off my soapbox there for a second. If you have anything to add, feel free.
I mean, I think that there's only one party of anti-war, and that's the Libertarian Party. I'd encourage you just simply check us out. Our platform has not substantially changed since 1973. And we have consistently been, we're already against the next war, we like to say, in the libertarian movement. So join with us and help us stop that next war.
Well said. Well said. So, where are you from?
Where am I from?
Yeah.
Well, I was technically born in Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, but I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa County.
So, there's the sheriff from Arizona. This is a really rough transition.
Oh my gosh!
And that sheriff just got pardoned. So, how do you pronounce his last name?
Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Arpaio. So, really, really unpopular pardon, it appears.
From unpopular sheriff, as far as I could tell.
Yeah. Here's his big thing. He basically made it so the prisons that people were in were not very comfortable. And that's the nicest way I can put it. He personally described his jail as a concentration camp. There's several things that went down with him that was very, very shady. Now, what I should say is it doesn't appear that he was convicted of any crime ever. So with the exception of the thing that he's being pardoned for, which was criminal contempt. So I guess he had people, or there was investigations around him targeting minorities to figure out if they were undocumented immigrants. And but there's a huge list. I actually have this list up on the screen of all these terrible things that, like, he arrested people that reported on him and things of that nature. But again, none of these things were none of them. He was not convicted on any of these. So I can't say that he's necessarily a bad man. What I can say is the idea of pardoning somebody is such a beautiful idea. I love the idea of pardoning somebody when they didn't do anything wrong. And I can think of so many great situations where it's appropriate. Let's say, most everybody in prison, because most everybody in prison is there for drug offenses, nonviolent drug offenses. It's not about mistreating other people or running a quote-unquote concentration camp. It was about you making a choice to do something with your own body, which, as I already covered, is your property. So there's so many opportunities to pardon somebody that would be, let's say, really, really appropriate. And then we've got Sheriff Joe, who got pardoned and really isn't helping out Trump in this, because with all of the tension around racism and this white nationalist stuff, this gentleman is in trouble, essentially, for profiling people based off of their race. So it doesn't help Trump's campaign. And the only thing that I would encourage is, if we want to see people pardoned, let's pardon the ones that actually did zero harm to anyone else. There are violent drug offenders, but the vast majority of them are nonviolent. So let's get them out of prison, because it's a ridiculous thing to make something illegal when you have no victim. Your turn.
Well, I mean, Sheriff Joe is just... Well, first of all, he's such a polarizing figure, and I mean, at the risk of sounding like a horrible person, I don't necessarily care so much about how the prisoners, you know, from what I understand, you know, they were given pretty nasty conditions, but I mean, it's prison, it's time out. But I mean, in my world, right, nobody goes to prison unless they've committed a crime against an identifiable victim, so, you know, then they're compensating for this, but I can see your point, where there's probably a lot of people that were in Tent City, as it's called, that were there for no more of a crime than possession of a plant, and that's just stupid, and that's foolish, that people might have to go through such a horrible experience like that. Where I do have a really huge issue with Sheriff Joe is that he actually, for sure, was going after and racially profiling Latinos and instructing his officers to pull them over at a greater rate than others. And I have a huge problem with that, because I want the government to treat everybody like an individual. And this is not a, well, maybe he was profiling. No, there was a clear statistical chain of evidence that he was racially profiling Latinos. It was confirmed in a court of law. And although he wasn't brought up on criminal proceedings and convicted, the Maricopa County lost many, many, many civil lawsuits to the tunes of millions of dollars of taxpayer money. I mean, even if you're a fiscal conservative, you should be concerned about a sheriff who styles himself as America's toughest sheriff, who's losing millions of dollars to lawsuits, civil lawsuits for the county.
Great point.
I mean, come on. If you were a city official and you were causing lots of lawsuits and the city attorney was getting his paycheck, but boy, you were causing millions of dollars in payouts against the city government, you'd be fired quickly. County, Maricopa County is one of the largest counties in the country, so it's harder to realize what's going on. And for some reason, people care a lot about City of Scottsdale or City of Phoenix's elections, but they care very little for Maricopa County. Yeah. Most people don't even know that there's a board of supervisors there, let alone what do? I don't really know what those people are. Why do we have those? And then you realize that they have like way more power than any of the city officials. But you know, again, you got to stop voting. And again, I used to live there, so I can say we have to stop voting for people who have a complete disregard for treating people as innocent until proven guilty and want to treat people based on groups. I don't care about your religion, your creed, and the government should be blind to all of that other than the supposed crime that's been committed. And when that happens, then you can, you know, take care of it. But it's just ludicrous. Even if you're a fiscal conservative and you loved his tough on crime stance and you hate immigrants, surely you're worried about the millions of dollars of money, of your money that's flowing into these immigrants' hands as they successfully sue civilly against Maricopa County. Sheriff Joe has got to go. I mean, he's done. I know that sounds like such a slogan.
It really does.
Got to go. And maybe I'll go work that campaign.
But I think we got a sign to pick it with.
Yeah, exactly. But the real issue is that he got pardoned for, wasn't it contempt of court?
Yeah, criminal contempt of court.
And it's like, first of all, I mean, so what this means is that he did it again. Like, he got caught, his hand is in the cookie jar, and instead of going, oh, I'll be good, he didn't even bother with that. He was just like, you know what, I'm America's toughest sheriff, and fuck that federal judge, and Obama, whatever, right? And I'm sure there was an Obama, somehow he was involved in a negative way. And
we're connecting all kinds of strange dots.
Well,
in this one.
I mean, Sheriff Joe's famous for going after sending a deputy to Hawaii to find his birth certificate, and he was one of the big, you know, Obama wasn't a naturally born citizen, and all this sort of thing. So, I mean, it's kind of connected. He's got some. So there again, he's spending lots of taxpayer dollars instead of keeping the gangs out of inner city Phoenix. He's busy going after whether or not the president of the United States is a naturally born citizen, which, I mean, I can't imagine that at this level and this scrutiny that the president and presidential candidates go under nowadays, they knew exactly where he was from. They knew exactly where he was, where he grew up, everything about him. The Republicans knew everything about him. They knew there was nothing there. That's why they didn't really push it. They were just happy to let a bunch of crazy people on the right go with it because it was a good talking point. It kind of confused people. But, you know, so, yeah, but this is just ludicrous. And it's contrary, like you said, to Trump's statement that he was going to respect the rule of law, right? What he's doing is he's saying, actually, I don't care if that judge said that you messed up, Sheriff, I'm going to pardon you. And I think that that's an abuse of the presidential pardon. That's supposed to be a check on both the judiciary and legislative branches, but instead he's using it to kind of say, if I like you, then you can do whatever you want and screw the judge. You know, that really does not sit well with me.
So we need to wrap it up, but there's one more thing that I wanted to cover, and that is Hurricane Harvey is currently, right now, as we speak, ripping through Texas. And I have a friend who's there right now named Larry. Last night I watched a video. Larry comes up and plays squash with me sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I watched a video of him in his home with about 3 feet of water all the way through his home. He's not in a flood zone. He's not. He was not at risk. And he's in this video saying, hey, I'm fine. I've gotten upstairs. My family's up there. I'm all right. If anybody needs help, come over here. Which just warmed my heart as far as like he's going to have tremendous amounts of damage. And he's out there just trying to look out for everybody. So if you're in that area, please look out for yourself and look out for those around you. But with that being said, when big events like this take place, and it's going to be a huge financial burden, keep an eye out for terrible, terrible laws being passed where you might have end up giving up your freedom in exchange for a little bit of comfort, because that comfort will be temporary, but that freedom will last forever. Keep an eye out for that kind of thing. Keep an eye out for this kind of fear propagating to, you know, push parties one way or the other. This was a natural disaster. This is not something that any political party could control. So let's not blame a political party for this. Let's not blame an individual for this. This is not an act of Congress. This is an act of nature. So when you see all of the potential laws that might, I'm just predicting, just saying it's going to happen. When you see all of that stuff happening, don't have a knee-jerk reaction here. Don't respond out of fear. Respond out of compassion. But keep in mind that probably the most compassionate thing you can do is protect their liberty for the long term, not for just a short-term relief. That's going to wrap it up for us for today. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.